Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Tag Talks. And I'm super excited today for the topic and the guest, which is Mr. John Spencer, one of my personal friends and great co-workers from years past in the Army G1. But in this edition of Tag Talks, we're really going to link in and talk about John's book, Connected Soldiers, Life, Leadership, and Social Connections in Modern War, but also tie in a little bit about John's field work in urban warfare, as well as the current Gaza conflict going on in the Mideast. John, I'm going to give you a little bit of intro and then give you some seconds here to talk about yourself. You know, I know you don't like to do that all the time. But John's the chair of urban warfare studies at the Modern War Institute up at West Point. He's published over 100 articles, probably more than that. He's a regular contributor on news shows, TV, and in different academic settings and forums. Probably most important for me is that he's a 25-year Army veteran with multiple combat tours in Iraq. Early on in OF1 and then in 2008 as well. And he's a published author numerous times over. A couple other books of his, Understanding Urban Warfare, and then also the mini manual for the Urban Defender. If you are interested in urban warfare, you probably know who John Spencer is. He is definitely active on social media and in other forums and academic writings. Hey, just really glad to have you, John.
Well, thanks for having me, sir.
So what's going on right now for you before we get started talking about one of your books?
Oh, man, life. Unfortunately, I think the only the dead have seen the end of war. So I've been quite busy with both the Ukraine war and now the war against Hamas in Gaza.
Yeah, certainly a lot to kind of chew on. I know you've been around. Where's the last place you visited?
I was in Khan Yunis, Gaza, going on about a month ago now in February.
How was that?
It was surreal. It was, we have, you know, I visit the National Training Center, and actually I'm kind of a connoisseur of urban warfare training sites. And I've covered almost every one of them on my podcast, but nothing resembles what I saw in Gaza, just with the complexity of the three-dimensional terrain, the tunnels, the rubble. It was even for somebody who studied it for a very long time, very surreal and concerning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've read most of your stuff that you've put out. You know, tunnels as a strategy really just kind of blew my mind a little bit. But let's digress, because I know, you know, what I wanted to highlight today is one of your one of your fantastic books, that Connected Soldiers, which has a lot of themes, I think, that are very I think poignant for the Army today. You know, one of the biggest ones being, you know, how do you build cohesive teams and connect folks? But there's a lot going on in your book. Maybe just tell us a little bit about, you know, what drove you to write it and you know, some of the big themes.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. What drove me to write it was the fact that I wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, and I didn't get to pick the title, but called The Band of Tweeters in 2015, where I just talked about observing a change between two deployments, because I did the invasion of Iraq in 2003, which was very, very like I had imagined, like I had seen when I was a young soldier. I came in as a private, everything from sitting around the Humvee and talking to writing letters on the back of MREs, and compared that to when I went back to Iraq in 2008, where we all had, you know, ubiquitous connection, cell phones. You didn't even go to the computer banks. You just had computers in your shoes or wherever. And I wrote that op-ed, and I got offers to write the book. And the book became really the ending of a long-term study, even as I was going through my career and going to ILE and other professional military education story and studying the past of what worked and the ideal of cohesion and what it was, whether it was task cohesion and social cohesion. So I try to do a lot in my book, because it's part memoir, you know, with the funny stories of, you know, as a young platoon leader, what happened in 2003, and as a company commander in 2008, but also looking very hard at combat effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And I actually I had found one photo in a very old book about, you know, very old warfare, where the guy just amazingly in one picture explained to me how all of our systems, from personnel systems to motivation systems to doctrine, all this fits into, which is what we really care about, is equals combat effectiveness.
Yeah.
In all the studies that have ever been done, to include American soldiers, German soldiers, like all quantitative and qualitative research, says that the reason that soldiers fight is because of the people to their left and right. You know, that band of brothers, band of sisters and brothers and family, that cohesion that we call, you know, primary group cohesion. And I tried to explain that through the lens of these two experiences and then forecast the future. And I didn't know, but it would be right before COVID as well, when the whole world was forced into a virtual world. You know, everything was online, work, mm-hmm. school, everything. And I kind of predict into the future, not just for the soldiers, because we know cohesion is like the golden nugget that you have to go to war, to endure war, and to live with it afterwards. And that really came to bear in COVID, when the world learned that, yeah, you can go into the virtual world with all the power of social media, but there are still vital connections. And that's why I settled on Connected Soldiers, vital connections that we all need with our support groups, whether in combat or out of combat.
Yeah, that's, so let me go back to your Times article though, right? You know, you said you got banned of tweeters. Like what drove the New York Times to use that title?
I mean, I think it was, I got messages from all around the world too, but I think it's because I talk about in the, you know, you can only say so much in an 800 word article about, yeah. We had experienced a traumatic event by getting hit by an IED. A young civilian child was killed, and I was going to talk to my troops, and I went to find them, and they were all connected online,
yeah,
to their families or friends or anybody but themselves. So that's where they kind of settled on band of tweeters, you know, basically that they'd rather talk to people that aren't in combat with them. And that was the trend I had seen, even because I had a company that had been knocked down and was struggling and was missing that vital bit of cohesion. I even talk about in the book how you can measure it, right? Because as leaders, we learn to, you know, first observe before you make changes and all these things. There are a couple ways that even science says you can tell if people are connected, and the way they talk to each other, both the formal and informal leaders. There are a couple signs in that experience that online connectivity was having an impact on not just cohesion, but performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what are the other things that you landed on that you could measure? Obviously the interaction between folks, that seems really, really important. And you know, if you're at or with a small group team, you can smell that immediately by just kind of watching and sensing. But I don't know, what'd you land on, John?
I landed on other measurements of performance too. And I grew up, I came in as an E1, made it to Sergeant First Class, and then transferred to be an officer. So I had a little bit of, you know, depending on who you talk to, experience on, like, you know, the way that people take care of their equipment and the discipline and all that is an equals performance.
Yeah.
So I was able to read on that. I was, how they talk to not just themselves, you know, like friends, you know, whether it's the specialist mafia or whether they, how they talk to their leaders. That communication is almost, you know, you could be a scientist and directly pick up on that.
Yeah.
How much time they're spending with each other. Do they eat together? Do they, you know, these things that are really human, but you can pick on them really quickly and then tie them to performance. Causation isn't, you know, the way that, you know, how they say that, but there's definitely signs of, you know, red flags is what I was calling it. I actually almost called the book basically Operating in the Red, because for many reasons, and this was the era of, you know, extreme personnel management issues with the surges and the stop loss and things like that. So I almost called it Operating in the Red, mm-hmm. because the whole army was stressed.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what cohesion is for, is when you're at the most stress you could ever be. And I taught at Ranger School, so I mean, we put people in those conditions, And your ability to lead or to be a team member under stress is what's most important. But the whole army at that point was under stress.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a couple of things, you know, I think the army right now is still working through some of that, right? You know, I mean, our chiefs, one of his main focuses is the continuance to build cohesive teams, right? I mean, it's a directed priority, from the top.
A small story about the chief is that I was in the story that I write about in my book in 2003. Our battalion commander got shot. Lieutenant Colonel George became my battalion commander, and he didn't send an email. He went physically out to every outpost, patrol base, anything, and looked every person in the eye and said, "I am the battalion commander. We will do these things." For me, it was almost like a symbolic human touch on the stresses of losing somebody, right? Lose anybody, but we lost our battalion commander. I mean, he later came back to the army, but he was gone that whole deployment. But it sometimes people need human connections, and I think he felt it in that moment.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, and that's a great story, John. Thanks for sharing that. You know, one of the things here in the tag, right, the adjutant general, like, so, hey, I got all this HR data, and it's all about people, right? You know, how we support soldiers from, you know, an administrative perspective. We've been on this little bit of a science project to pull the data together to really show a snapshot of units, because it kind of gets after the red flag comment you commented on. I think there's something to units that do, you know, some of those admin functions well versus some that don't. And that's the hypothesis a little bit, but, you know, we're still kind of pulling that data together to see, you know, to see what we see. You know, do you turn in, you know, that paperwork on time? Do you do your pay stuff correctly? Do you actually work those things actively, or do you let it, you know, languish for a long time? I think there's, right, there's this maybe external piece that, you know, gets at the heart of some of the behavioral stuff you're laying out, which ties to performance overall.
Yeah, this is what I try to take this on, and I know working with you and back when, it seems like so long ago, sir, back in the Army G1 and trying to develop a dashboard or something to be able to track these things, and how do you measure the intangibles? In my book, I actually show, you know, that it's a system, right? So these are like red flags, but it doesn't mean that it can't be a highly combat effective force, but it's a red flag, which in the moment that I explained in my book and why I really wanted to use a real example is that there were so many red flags.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just, you know, care of equipment, discipline, the way they talk to each other, SOPs. It was like so the system can actually, and this is what people don't understand and why I love that one photo after 25 years of service, this one photo that can explain that it's so hard to measure the tangibles and the intangibles, but you can definitely identify red flags. And if you get so many red flags, you're combat ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's some of our approach too, as we're going into this. It's like, you know, we landed probably on, 35 data points, you know, hey, do you do your evals? Do you do pay? You know, do you have debt issues? Do you, even workflow, something like, tracking how long it takes to do things, right? IPSE, that new big system we got out in the Army, allows you to kind of track some of that stuff. And, you know, data is king in this realm. You know, there's a bunch of areas where we can, you know, think about the intangibles in ways that we couldn't. But I think it's like an augment to what you're getting after with, you know, these human dynamics, you know, at the lowest levels. You know, obviously for me, that weighs heavier, but, you know, there's these other indicators we might be able to use.
And we have such history that this is why I point out cohesion. Like, all the data says that's a vital part. And how do you keep it and maintain it matters both in garrison as much as it does in combat. Because this is more of the reach of the book is that humans in general need connections. They want to feel connected to a group. That's the whole idea. And some people would argue that task cohesion, like agreeing on what the mission is and everything, is more important in some contexts versus social cohesion. Well, for the military in the job that we do, like our data says that social cohesion, because you're willing to die for the men and women to your left and right, is of more importance than task cohesion. Yes, you have to agree on the mission. And that's one of the, you know, all these things are important, but like what's most important, which is a challenge I know for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. So what kind of recommendations do you have for small unit leaders out there, you know, through your research?
Yeah, that's been the whole so what, right? So what, smart guy, what do you want us to do about it? Is that you have to create the time for cohesion to build.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of science that shows whether it's proximity or time spent. This is the ideal that, yes, hard training, absolutely, enduring shared hardships builds cohesion. Like, it's a fact. We know that. I mean, business people play like Navy SEALs, things like that, because they know that shared hardships and giving people moments that they can value as a individual and as a team is important. But the data also shows that just spending time together, knowing somebody, who they are as a person, equals cohesion as well. So the science actually says it's both. It's not one or the other. So this gets to, when you're in a connected world, we're more connected as a human race than we've ever been in the history of the human race. But we're also in many ways more alone, because the virtual world does not replace the real world. So as a leader, a junior leader or something, that means you have to, not just in PT, organize events that are disconnected from the virtual world, where you're actually either shared hardship or spending time together or getting to know each other. This is why, you know, the whole virtual workspace didn't work. And that can be programmed, but it's finding the right moments, because you don't want it to be like mandatory fun and just forced. Like, everybody understands this is, we have to be here. This is, they don't understand what the goal is, which is the challenge of leadership, is to design those moments that give people value, but don't just go through the motions, and create the understanding of who everybody is to each other and give them the shared hardship. So I don't think anybody needs, sometimes we forget, and this is in the book as well, we forget that why we used to do things, like even eating together. Like, a lot of times you have the minute, the time that to go eat, even General Georgia, like, how much time do you need to eat? Like, that whole block of instruction, of that block of time. But breaking bread together, like at West Point, where there's a mandatory meal, which is the lunch meal, has more to do than you getting the vitamins you need to eat. It's also about bonding. It's cohesion. It's about knowing people.
Yeah, and it's interesting, John, the way that you're explaining this, because we haven't really written this down to say, hey, this is part of this cohesion discussion or thinking, but I don't know, it makes a lot of sense. And if you really dive deep into a lot of our institutions and how we've trained and, you know, all of these shared experiences, it starts to come out. You know, we're just not maybe saying it out loud all the time.
Yeah, this is why I think, and you and I don't know if it came out when you and I were dead. I mean, I think one of the greatest initiatives that was ever in my time created was not in my squad. So the Sergeant Major of the Army's initiative that we have a lot of behaviors that aren't accepted, because it's about cohesion, right? When you are a family, then you have norms that are set up, like, that's not going to happen in my squad.
Yeah.
And that real, that ownership, whether it's your battle buddy or your squad or whatever, like, not in my squad, which is really talking about cohesion. Like, it's a family. We're not coworkers. We're a family. We're a band of brothers and sisters. Like, we don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it, very good point. The thing you talked about, white space and whatnot. I mean, even a most recent, RAND study on rearm, right? The Army's kind of modernization, equipping and training concept, kind of talks about that, that, hey, there's not a lot of white space time. And then when folks see it, it gets consumed. But within this context, especially if we're doing some directed organic activities that are meant for cohesion, I think that gets after what the chief is talking about.
Yeah, there's always time, sir. You know that. It's about priorities.
Uh-huh.
This is when I became a writer. Everybody's like, I wish I had the time to write like you did. Like, we have the same amount of time. I just prioritize it a little bit more.
Yeah, well, you also don't sleep, John, so, you know, you're probably drinking, you know, Celsius late in the evening, so.
Right.
You know, but yeah, to your point, absolutely. And that's something we probably don't do as well as we could, is prioritize to drive what we find is most important. I think this is why it's good to talk about cohesive teams and why I was, you know, I really wanted to do, you know, this Tag Talks on your book, because, you know, you released it several years ago, but it's, you know, I think it's is as important today, more important today than maybe even when you released it. So I appreciate it. I do want to shift on you a little bit and just talk about social media. You did talk about, again, maybe the title of your op-ed in the New York Times, you know, several years ago. But, you know, your point on, you know, if you go today to the motor pool, you know, chances are you're going to see a bunch of people on their phones or wherever. Right. You know, in the company area, in my own headquarters here, I think people are on their own phones doing their own things a good amount of time. But anyway, can you talk a little bit about what you think social media is doing to cohesion?
Sure. I mean, and this is the point of the book is that in many ways, it's making it an extreme challenge to build cohesive teams because humans need connections. Soldiers need connections. And this is they feel they're connected in their virtual world. Say, you know, a human, this is a challenge that we've always faced is, I mean, it's a complex body of interests, motivations, needs, everything. And one of the things we know you need is connection. You need purpose and connection in your life. Social media does that. And I'm not the old guy stomping on his desk saying, you know, you kids need to put your phones away, because I'm huge on social media as well. It has immense capabilities, but it's a double-edged sword. So they're looking for a connection, and it's not there. You're not trying to do away with people's social support networks, but you're trying to provide them in their service, which is, you know, very complex on the motivations and everything. But the fact that you're trying to make a connection in the real world versus the virtual world, but you have to have a battle with the value of both the individual and the team to those other. This is what I talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. Really, what the challenge I saw between 2003 and 2008, and it seems like that's so long ago, is that we had entered a world, because the Army is a reflection of society, so you're not going to change that. But we'd entered a world where those all that vast connection to other social support networks, even the home front, right? So a soldier deploys to battle, and it's different than before, where you went to battle and you wrote your letters, and even how you communicated people was different. But now you still have the ability to stay connected to your families, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But it comes with additional stressors, just like when a soldier's in a motor pool and he or she's connected to whatever social support networks or whatever, it adds new complexities to the leader in building teams and managing teams that you can't resist. You have to find a way to create the moments in the real world to do the connections and increase performance.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said, you know, because I think you do a good job highlighting that in the book, where you got to think hard about this on how you build your, you know, a more cohesive team in the context of all of these, you know, digital and social media worlds and technology, et cetera. But at the same time, it's actually really good as well to keep connected to friends and family. So,
yes.
So how do you work through that is, you know, it's one of those things that I think leaders have to think through and talk about and then figure out how to kind of navigate.
Yeah, you definitely can't waste time. So I used to, I mean, it's normal. When I first came in, there was wasted time. And it now, because that time will be filled. Like if you send somebody somewhere and you don't have it, and it's not purposeful, it's not calculated on how that time is being spent, they'll fill it. It's now leaders will have less time, but they have to take the time they have to have the most impact, have the most value, whether it's building a team or whatever it is, creating the purpose, all those things, is that you have to be very thoughtful on how time is spent.
Yeah. So again, let's shift gears a little bit. So Gaza, you know, the fight in Gaza, the IDF, what have you seen, you know, on the IDF side, on this topic as you've gone over there and thought about, you know, how they're operating?
I mean, especially from a from this aspect of the cohesion and connections and everything, it's so unique that the fact that you're fighting a war for the survival of your nation 2 miles from your house, and what that does to the formation, to the individual soldiers, it was very eye-opening, and it really taking all these theories and putting them into a new level of intensity. Even the fact that you would come back, I would be driving into Gaza and you pass civilians on the side of the road set up with like a hamburger grill, just trying to feed a soldier who's heading into battle. There's so many fascinating elements of that. I mean, I can talk about the kind of war fighting challenges that I saw, but mm-hmm. I also have that in mind too, just about soldiering and how that impacts the fact that that's ever present, that there is no disconnect between, like, we have fought many of our wars expeditionary. So we're far from home and there's kind of a disconnect. Not only are these soldiers connected to their families, they're connected to their nation, and the entire nation at war is very tacit. You can feel it. And I felt that every time I've gone there.
Yeah. So from the, and we've talked about this in the past too, from a connectedness standpoint though, like, so as the IDF's going into Gaza, I'm assuming they're leaving their phones or supposed to be leaving their phones, you know, essentially back at home,
yes.
Those couple of miles, right?
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, this is a leadership challenge that soldiers will find a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've seen that in Gaza. This is what I wrote about in my book too, is like, if you think the fix to all of this is just before you get on that, whatever it is, airplane, ship, whatever, you know, put all your laptops, put all your cell phones in a box, we're going, you know, silent. Soldiers will find a way.
Yeah.
And that's what you've seen in the IDF, unfortunately, even with the guidance, and that's a leadership challenge too, with the discipline and everything, but soldiers want connection. So it's you have to figure out a way to still in this world, provide the connection, have the mission focus, have that awareness. But yeah, so yes, they've taken cell phones, and there's very directed guidance on when cell phones can be used, turned on, anything.
Yeah, but I think you said the million-dollar kind of comment there. It's like, you know, this want and need for folks to be connected. You know, so yes, there's a directive, you know, from the chain of command, but you know, soldiers are making choices, you know, as they move. So I think that's important.
And I think it'll apply. I saw it too. It applies in Israel as much as it does to us in after, whether it's after a combat deployment or after service. It's like you just made that a part of their identity, being a soldier, being a member of a team. And how you keep that connection is very important to a human. I saw that in the IDF too, those that were, you know, pulled off and now in rest and refit and preparations. If that connection transfers throughout the whole cycle of being a soldier, of being in a deployment to afterlife.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, hey, John, we've run on our own time for today. I could seriously talk to you for probably a couple of days, because there's so much going on. And then again, our connection, right, started probably, I don't know, almost 15 years ago now.
Yes, sir.
In the Army G1, working on health of the force and ready, resilient, and thinking a lot about, you know, hey, how do we get after certain behaviors in the Army? Hey, just proud of you and extremely grateful for the time today, and you know, appreciate your scholarship and your drive to help inform us. You know, just keep up what you're doing from my standpoint. I'll give you the parting shot here. Go ahead, John.
Well, thank you so much, sir. It's been an honor, and I am a soldier for life, and I'm extremely proud of my service. I'm proud of you as well, as our history does go way back.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Appreciate you.
Thanks, sir.
For those out there, you can connect on all of our social media sites at the Adjutant General. Look forward to talking to you at our next Tag Talk. Thanks.
Thank you.